Hello, thank you all for coming. And Helene, thank you for inviting me. So what I'm going to talk to you today about is screening for medical conditions in a dental setting. Acting locally, thinking globally, which is kind of the theme. But I'm going to talk about chronic conditions, heart disease and diabetes, and Dr. Resnick's going to talk to you about HIV and hepatitis C. So let me just give you a little bit background how I got into this. I am a public health person. I was recruited to the New Jersey Dental School about, 10 years ago, maybe a little more than that, by a colleague who I knew from the New York City Health Department. We worked in HIV/AIDS. Shortly after I got there, I met somebody, Dr. Michael Glick, who I don't know how many people out here are oral health care providers. So you might have known his name. You might know his name. He's a renowned, nationally and internationally renowned oral medicine expert. He's also the editor of the Journal of the American Dental Association and the dean at the dental school in Buffalo. But when I met him, he had an interest in, he had a vision, an expanded role for healthcare, oral healthcare providers, and more interprofessional integration between oral healthcare and primary medical care. And as a public health person, I saw that the dental setting could be an opportunity to help us maybe tackle some of these major public health issues. So together, we developed this line of work, and we've been doing it since about 2005. So, again, what am I talking about and why is it important? I'm talking about the integration of oral health care providers into public health strategies that are going to be developed to help us stem these rising epidemics of things like diabetes and heart disease by doing early identification of people who are unaware that they may be at increased risk for disease, who could benefit from prevention. So that's the first piece of this. And I will give you all the background to show you why the dental setting is a good resource to do that. There is another piece where you could also monitor people who already have hypertension or on medication or have diabetes and are on medication to see how well controlled they are. But I'm really focusing more on identifying people who do not yet know that they're at increased risk and who could benefit from early primary prevention, changing their behavior, getting on early medication. So why am I talking about screening in a dental setting? It's an underutilized resource, and the reason I say that is if you look at the literature, and these are data that come from both the CDC and ADA, American Dental Association, not American Diabetes Association, 60 to 70% of adults above 40 will see their dentist within a 12-month period. 10 to 24% of those people have not seen a physician in that same time period. There's that range that comes from different studies. The other piece that's important, so you could see there are a lot of people who see their dentist in a given 12-month period who haven't seen a primary care provider. Point of care testing tools exist. And by that, why that's important, if you look at any of the tenets of a successful screening program, you want to have screening tools that are well validated, easy to use, well accepted by the providers and the patients, and I'm going to talk to you about those. And you also want to deal with diseases where you can modify the risk factors if they're identified early. So the two diseases I'm going to focus on are heart disease and diabetes. So just to give you a quick little background, heart disease, the incidence and prevalence is very high and is expected to continue to increase. The costs associated with it are also high and expected to increase. The risks that are associated with it, we all know, are well-recognized risk factors, and those are modifiable risk factors as well. The bottom piece on the slide here, the bottom point, is a very important point. One-third to two-thirds are unaware of their risk factors. I've even seen data as high as 71% of people are unaware of their risk factors, depending on which risk factor you're talking about. It could be blood pressure, high cholesterol, low HDL. Age, obviously, is nothing we can do anything about, and smoking is another one that we can do something about. So if you look at the data in this slide, this is men, this is women, and down here is age. This is just to show you, and here's the prevalence in the population for adults greater than 20 years of age. This comes from NHANES. This is just to show you that with increasing age, we're going to see that increasing prevalence, and that's not anything we can really do much about. But if you start to look here, this is showing you again men and women, but what this is, so here we have somebody who's 50 to 54, As they develop an increasing number of the risk factors, which is what each of these sets of bars shows you, you see a dramatic increase in their risk. So the same age, but as you increase the number of risk factors. So in this last one, it's somebody 50 to 54 who has a low HDL, a high total cholesterol, would be considered high blood pressure, a smoker, and has diabetes. And you can see how dramatic their risk is for their having a cardiovascular disease event within 10 years. The good news is that we have done, this is a slide for mortality, deaths due to cardiovascular disease, 1900 to 2009. Around 1970, we started to get a handle, and we've been doing a good job at controlling mortality. However, morbidity and prevalence are still on the rise. So now let's talk about diabetes, the other thing I want to focus on. Since 1995, there's been a dramatic 82% increase in the prevalence of diabetes in the U.S. Along with that, you see a huge cost. It's $174 billion just direct medical costs for diabetes. If you go to diabetes plus pre-diabetes, we're talking about $245 billion. Again, the undiagnosed prevalence is an important point here. 27% of people have diabetes and they don't know it. 53% are pre-diabetes and don't know it. These 53% and these 27% are the people we want to capture and get them into primary medical care. So the idea would be you'd identify them in a dental setting, I'll show you how, and then refer them to a physician. So if we want to really see what's gone on with diabetes and obesity, which is probably the biggest risk factor for diabetes, on the left side we have 1994, 2000, 2008. Top three maps of the U.S. are obesity. The bottom piece is diabetes. As the color intensifies, you go increasing percentage, all the way up to greater than for diabetes, for obesity rather greater than or equal to 26%, and for diabetes greater than or equal to 9% is a dark color. The idea here is you could see two things. Over time, you can see the increase in the prevalence of both obesity and diabetes. You can see by the darkening color. But you can see how the two epidemics really mirror each other. So as the obesity epidemic is increasing, as is the diabetes epidemic. The projections for the U.S. in 2015, if we continue to go at the rate we are, we're going to have an increasing prevalence of obesity to the point that 41% of people are going to meet the definition of obesity. By 2030, 51%. So clearly, it's an epidemic we need to get a handle on. Besides, the cost is going to be astronomical. If you look at the leading causes of direct healthcare expenditure, again, for the U.S., up at the top you see heart condition, and then down here around 7, I think it is diabetes, although on each side of diabetes, it's hypertension, hyperlipidemia, again, things that are risk factors for heart disease. So you can see a lot of our direct health care expenditure goes to these two diseases and conditions associated with them. So how does this fit in to what are the global projections for these diseases? So if you look at global mortality, interestingly enough, both for your low and middle income countries as well as your high income countries, non-communicable diseases, your NCDs, make up the majority of the mortality. This was not always the case. Many of you, I'm sure, have heard of the Millennium Development Goals, and those were mostly focused on ending poverty, ending hunger, and some of your infectious diseases, HIV, malaria, TB. They really didn't talk about your non-communicable diseases. In 2011, as with the increased recognition of how important these NCDs are, in 2011, the UN had a special summit on non-communicable diseases. And for the first time, oral health was included as one of the non-communicable diseases. So the importance of this is being recognized. These data are from 2010. If you look at worldwide statistics for mortality, what you'll see is the NCDs make up more than half of all of the mortality. And a lot of this mortality in the low and middle income countries happens before the age of 70. But importantly is if you look at the risk factors, 80% of these premature NCD deaths are actually preventable. So what I'm really talking about is getting to this point of prevention. You all know the Affordable Care Act has a huge emphasis on prevention, primary care, and better integrated healthcare delivery. So the concept of screening is becoming more and more important. Screening to identify people early in the disease syndrome and who are unaware and could benefit from prevention. So if we look at the projections, again, global projections. What you see here, this is cancer, this is heart disease. So you can see those are projected to continue to increase. Where down here, the dash is HIV. This is malaria, the light blue, and tuberculosis. They're expected to stay roughly the same or decrease. So again, the projected mortality is going to be more from, globally speaking, your non-communicable diseases. We'll skip this one. This is looking at the projected burden of disease. This is something that looks at mortality plus morbidity. Many of you may have heard of the dailies. That's a way to compare across areas and use the same thing. And what that does, it combines morbidity and mortality for the first time. And if you look again by major causes, and that's communicable, non-communicable injuries, and you look at what's going on, high income, middle income, low income, so what we see is that communicable diseases, which is in the blue, are going to increase from, well, they're not going to increase it. For here's 2000, they're going to slightly decrease in middle income. They're not very important in high income. And again, slightly decrease in low income. The reverse is true of what you see with the non-communicable diseases in like the deep purple. So that's going to slightly increase. High income countries, it's going to basically stay the same. But when you start to go to the middle income and the low income, that's basically going to increase. So again, what we're talking about doing locally is something that's going to be important globally as well. This is just to show you the global distribution of cardiovascular disease and diabetes death rates. So again, the darker color is the higher death rate. You can see it's concentrated not only in your high income, but throughout the world. This is from males. I'm sorry, this one was females, males. So it pretty much follows the same. It's just a little bit greater intensity for males. Now, I want to show you what's the projection for diabetes. For the North America, it's supposed to increase 192% between 2000 and 2030. For Europe, 5%. And we can talk about in the time period when we have questions why we think Europe is so much better off than we are. The Western Pacific region, it's supposed to increase 93%, going on what's projected numbers. For the South Americas and Central America, it's going to increase 117%. Africa, 159%. East Mediterranean region, 180%. Southeastern Asian region, 158%. Oops, sorry. So you can see the projected increase for diabetes globally is dramatic. And if you just look at the overall numbers between 2000, it's supposed to go from practically double between 2000 and 2030, an increase of 114% if we keep going at the rate we are. So again, I think everybody out here knows what the major causes of premature death and risk factors are for some of these non-communicable diseases. And you can see all of these that I have here are ones that are avoidable, that are modifiable. So again, getting people into early prevention, modifying these risk factors, is important. This is just to show you that if you look at the global distribution of burden of disease that's attributable to leading risk factors, you'll see the first one is underweight. But in terms of globally speaking, low-income countries, high-income are in white. Blood pressure's up there, tobacco, alcohol, here's cholesterol. So all the ones that I just showed you as modifiable. This is a striking graph that shows what's the prevalence of overweight in what they call the Anglosphere. The U.S. is in here, 74.1% prevalence of overweight. That's not obesity. We're talking about overweight now. This is New Zealand, Australia, United Kingdom, Canada, and Ireland. So look at these dramatic numbers. Clearly work to be done to decrease that. So what are the public health goals? So if we look at Healthy People 2020, they want to improve cardiovascular disease health through risk factor prevention, detection, and treatment. This all speaks, again, to early identification. The American Heart Association, in 2012, they put out new strategic impact goals. This is something called 20-20-20, which many of you may have heard about. They want to improve cardiovascular disease health by 20%, decrease cardiovascular disease deaths by 20% by 2020. Hence, 20-20-20 is what they call it. The FDI, which is the International Dental Association, in 2012, they came out with a policy statement for the first time on non-communicable diseases, where they're promoting a shift to a horizontal approach and an approach that is more integrated across other disciplines that are addressing non-communicable diseases. So very often you hear the oral health community talking about having the medical community recognize things like the importance of sealants or fluoride or varnishes. Well, it works the other way too, to have the oral health community start to recognize they're part of a healthcare team. And a lot of what they can do, not only what's going on in the mouth reflecting systemic diseases, but what they could do as a healthcare provider. So I'm going to keep forgetting that's the pointer. Diabetes, again, what I wanted to do here is show you Healthy People 2020. So they want to reduce disease and economic burden, but I wanted to give you one of the objectives here to reduce the number of new cases of diagnosed diabetes in the population. Again, speaking to prevention. Under the oral health section, this is a quote, increase the proportion of adults tested or referred for glycemic control from dentist or dental hygienist in the past year. Also, the American Diabetes Association, their goals for 2012, double the percent of Americans who are aware of their prediabetes, again, speaking to the need for screening and early identification, and get a 10% increase in people who are engaged in preventive behavior. All, again, speaking to this need to catch people early, refer them for physicians, to primary, it doesn't have to be a physician, it could be any primary care provider. So what does the literature show in terms of why is it important? So again, I told you about the undiagnosed prevalence. These are key numbers. But what's really striking is if you look at the literature, these are longitudinal studies that show if you get people into prevention, you can decrease the risk of coronary heart disease anywhere from 21 to 37%, up to 71% decrease in risk prevalence. For diabetes, you can have a 51% decrease in the incidence and a 43% decrease in relative risk. Again, showing you that there is well-documented evidence to support the impact of prevention. And again, these are longitudinal studies. The diabetes studies, they had 20 years of follow-up. How are we doing for prevention in the U.S.? Two key things that I want to point out. Still, 40% of adults have either high blood pressure, high cholesterol, that should be low LDL, or they're a current smoker. 40%, there's a 40%, this is very striking, a 40% decrease since 2007 in adults meeting the recommended levels of 7 risk factors. That includes whether or not you're a smoker, whether or not you have high blood pressure, high cholesterol, body mass index, physical activity, diet, and I'm missing one. I forgot. I'd have to say them all over again. So again, so see which one I'm missing. But I think most of this audience knows. And these are just some of the actual statistics that go along with this 40% decrease. Some of the important ones is here. Well, while there are a fair number of people aware of their hypertension, we only have 55% people who have controlled hypertension. And even though it's 82%, we'd like to get 100%. So the other reason why the dental setting is important is there's increasing evidence in the literature to say that there's an association between oral health and systemic health. So I'll tell you what, as of 2012, the data suggests an association between heart disease and periodontal disease. The mechanism is uncertain, and I want to point out there is no definitive evidence for a causal relationship. Periodontal disease does not cause heart disease, but there is an association. There are studies that show there's a positive effect when you do periodontal interventions. You see a decrease in the local periodontal inflammation. You see a short-term decrease in systemic inflammation and endothelial dysfunction, but that's short-term. There's no evidence, however, that the perio interventions are going to prevent or modify heart disease outcomes. So there's still work to be done to get a better understanding what's the nature of this association. Anybody who's interested, this is an excellent systematic review done by Peter Lockhart, and it's in Circulation 2012. So anybody who's interested should take a look at that. I think many of you, certainly the people in the oral health world, know that there's a synergistic relationship between diabetes and periodontal disease. If you have poorly controlled diabetes, you're three times more likely to develop chronic periodontal disease. And periodontal disease treatment improves glycemic control, which is very important in controlling morbidity associated with diabetes. So now to get to what are the actual strategies we're talking about. So I said that there were point of care testing or screening tools out there. For heart disease, the most well-recognized and commonly used one is the Framingham Risk Score. How many of you out here have heard of the Framingham Heart Study? Okay, so you know then this comes from that. Well-validated. While there are others, this is the one that's most commonly used, and I'll tell you what this looks for. So what we're doing is we're taking a finger stick of blood. With that finger stick of blood, we're going to determine total cholesterol and high-density lipoprotein. I'll show you the machines. So with that, with blood pressure and these demographic pieces of information, you can calculate a Framingham risk score. And I'm going to show you the machines that can give you these results chairside within 5 minutes. For diabetes, hemoglobin A1c. In 2011, the American Diabetes Association endorsed the use of hemoglobin A1c as a screening and diagnostic tool for diabetes in routine healthcare settings. It's favored over non-fasting random glucose tests. Again, with that same finger stick of blood, I'm going to show you how we can do chairside hemoglobin A1c. So, just to reiterate, most of you know what the Framingham risk score is, the risk of having a severe coronary heart disease event within 10 years. So what you want to be is 10% or lower. So if you screen someone and they are 11% or higher, that's someone who's at increased risk and should be referred. For A1C, does everybody know what hemoglobin A1C is measuring? Does anybody not know? Anybody want me to... I'll just elaborate a little bit. Hemoglobin A1C is looking at over a three-month period. It's the average amount of circulating glycosylated hemoglobin. The idea is your red blood cells have an average half-life of 3 months. Glucose has an affinity for red blood cells. So if you have excess circulating glucose, you're going to have a higher percentage of glycosylated hemoglobin than what you'd like to see. And the cut points that are now recognized, you want to have an A1C value of 5.7% or lower. 5.7 to 6.5 is somebody who would be considered a screen positive. They are at an increased risk of developing diabetes. They'd be your pre-diabetes. When you start to get 6.5% and above, that's considered diagnostic of diabetes. So that's a diagnostic screen positive. So anybody 5.7 and above is somebody who should be referred to a physician. I just came from the American Dental Association, where I was participating in a health screening project showing dentists how to do this, and dental hygienists and other oral health care providers, and screening them. A large number of them screened positive for diabetes and had no idea. And these are health care providers. So what do we know? Will it work? So what we've done, Dr. Glick and I and some other of our colleagues have looked at efficacy studies to see, can we get this to work? Can we do it? And what's the attitude that the healthcare providers, the patients, have about this? So the efficacy studies, theoretical calculations using NHANES, we found that 18% had a Framingham risk score above 10%. If you extrapolate that to the U.S. Census data from 2000, greater than 300,000 people are at increased risk of coronary heart disease. And to tell you, these are people who have been going to the dental clinic, have not seen their physician in the last 12 months, have no history of heart disease or diabetes, and not on any medication. Oops. Okay. So As far as the attitude, the majority of dentists and patients are willing to participate. They think it's important. As a matter of fact, patients are willing to pay $20, up to $20, to have these done in the dental setting. Have to say that there are some barriers. Patient willingness among the providers was the most important. Reimbursement was important, but it was the least important of the barriers recognized. Patient concerns, the most important was confidentiality. Among the physicians, they also felt it's important to do this in the dental setting, were willing to get referrals. For them, the training level of the oral health care provider. So these are the machines. This is called the CardioCheck. It's the only handheld device that's battery operated that can do high density lipoprotein, I need a little, and total cholesterol within 5 minutes, and it's well validated. You take a little finger stick of blood, this is the capillary tube, so with that same finger stick, this is what the results look like. This is the A1C test. With that same finger stick, you can take blood, this is the blood collector. Gives you various results within 5 minutes. Again, here are your criteria for screening. We wanted to see also, we just recently did this, if we add waist circumference and we add periodontal disease, does that help us to screen less people but still identify all the positives? And the reality, we were surprised, but if we add waist circumference as one of our screening criteria, we'd miss 54% of people who would have had been identified with an increased Framingham risk score. If we add periodontal disease, we miss 20% who are at increased risk for heart disease and 29% who have abnormal A1C. Again, this is the same thing, just a different definition for periodontal disease. So trying to refine your screening, you really will miss people who need to be captured. We also did a cost-benefit analysis, which is going to be published in a February or March issue of AJPH, and it shows that doing these can save healthcare dollars. Now, just to quickly tell you, can we translate this to a global setting? We've done this in India and had, these are the results. We were able to do it and see 11% elevated Framingham risk score and 32% abnormal A1C. So we're in discussions now to try and do this as a multi-center study in Australia, Brazil, and Great Britain. Dr. Resnick will talk about CLIA. This is just something that Dr. Glick wrote in 2005, that if you expand it beyond HIV, it says it would be wrong to demand that all dental care providers perform HIV tests in their office. However, for the provider who will take the time to acquire the skills necessary to perform such a task, doing so could be a benefit to society. And while we all know it's easy to tell people to modify their behavior, it's not so easy. And I just wanted to let people know there's the first oral systemic connection that's going to be in San Diego in February 7th to 8th for people who are interested.